should count how many are dead, but I'm not going to.
After graduating, you went to Concord.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up back at Neesha?
Well, I'd been in Concord for 3 years. I was there 3 years, 68, or 65 to 68, and found that community fantastic. The museum was incredible. It was a 1930s building, somewhat fireproof. Russell Cattell had collected period rooms, and the furnishings were all there as a result of the collecting of a local eccentric named Cummings Davis from the 17th century on. Furniture, decorative arts, everything that was all locally owned. So it was a fantastic museum to be involved with, and they had lacked a professional person before I arrived. So I was able to do a little bit with that. I was matched up with that job. They had a board member, board president at the time, who was very, very savvy of what was going on in the world, and she had contacted the program. Hey, Amanda. And hi, Lucy. Explain that. So she had contacted the program, and somehow, between Frank Spinney, who was a New Englander, and Lou Jones, and the others who knew me, they decided I would be a good match. So I went out for an interview. Was very much taken with the job and the position, and I could kind of create the job. It wasn't all spelled out. And the people were wonderful, and I guess I had the right sense of humor to fit in. And once you're in a local museum like that, that has a lot of support, you have an in with everybody in the community. Everybody from Mike Flood, who did the cleaning, I struck it off with him very, very well, to Marion Miller, who had been doing work with the textile collection and head of the guides. All of the guides were great people. And then all the supporting families, board members, the first families of descendants of the first families of Concord who were still there, like Gladys Hosmer and so on. In that community, either your ancestors were at Northbridge in 1775 or they weren't. If they weren't, you're kind of a newcomer. And so it just, everything clicked, and that worked out beautifully. There was a position that opened up. They contacted me about, I think, 2 years after I went to Concord. Olana was acquired by the state of New York, and they were looking for a director of that house museum. And I was contacted by Lou Jones and the others, explaining that that job was open. Would I be interested? And at the time, I was deeply involved in stuff in Concord and decided that, no, this was not the time to get involved in some new deal over there. Olana was a bit of a mess at the time because stuff had been hauled out to be auctioned off and then came back, and the whole thing was very muddled. I remember Lou Jones explaining the job, and I said, no, I didn't think I would be interested. He said, yes, but now that you're a New Englander, I realize how you feel about coming so far west, but you know, you won't even have to cross the Hudson. It's on the east bank. But even so, I didn't accept that. Then in 68, yes, this is my wife, Sue, right?
Hi.
You had a question?
Are you getting tired?
Of course.
Did he tell you about the Mayan Standing Brothers? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you can transcribe this, more power to you.
Okay.
That was your only question?
No, I'm looking for a dust mask.
Oh, they're either on the ledge in the kitchen or on the workbench out in the shed. I think they're in the workbench. What are they playing? They need a dust mask. where was I? Oh, the job offer. In 68, May of 68, it was the day that a bad tornado went through my hometown in Iowa, wiped out the whole middle of the town. I heard about it on the radio coming back from an interview here in Cooperstown. They had decided they needed a curator of Fenimore House and the Neisha Collection in general. Position was called associate curator. So they called me over to interview, and they said, we know you, and we think you would be a good person for this. So I came over and looked at it and decided that that offered a lot of real opportunities for me to move up, if you will, and be able to teach and do other things. So decided that that was the way to go, and I told them in Concord then, shortly after the board, that I would be leaving. And they said, well, is it money? Can we offer you more money? And I said, well, no, not really. It will be more money, but it's just what I need to do at this point. So then they got somebody else to take my position.
Did that job lead you back to going to the conservation program?
Well, I came back in 68. The conservation thing, we were doing all kinds of exhibits and so on. Lou Jones was there, of course. He retired, I believe, in 72 to tour and collect information about folk art all over the country. So he retired. And his successor was Peter Welsh. I have a number of things in the file about that period of time, which we probably could discuss briefly, but it was a difficult period of time. Peter Welsh came from the Smithsonian, and as director, he had done mainly research, encouraged that, and really encouraged all of us to do more research and more study of the collection and study of history, which was very, very good. But as an administrator, he had kind of the Washington bureaucratic outlook and considered himself in charge and started to behave in certain ways. It became apparent that he wanted his own people. He didn't want an inherited staff. And several people were backed in the corners and resigned or left under various circumstances. When it came to me, I was very good friends with the cats, serving as associate curator, but I think he was unhappy because I had been there so long, for a few years. And so he worked out a deal with Mrs. Keck that I would go down and take the conservation program, which was 2 years plus an internship, that I would be kept on salary, but that I would be a student full-time. I would not be called upon to come back and do any work at the museum while that was going on, the 2 years, but then I would do my internship there under Mrs. Keck. It was a good arrangement. In many ways, I could kind of see the handwriting on the wall. I wanted to do it, and Mrs. Keck was happy with it. But it also meant that if I didn't do that, I might as well start looking, because obviously he didn't want me anymore as a curator. So I was sent down there in 74. It was almost 10 years exactly from the beginning of my history museum work. I served through the conservation program. And it went the year, I have to check dates here. Things were not going well at NISA. I tried to stay out of it. I tried not to get involved. I was supposed to give monthly reports to Welsh about what was going on. Well, he did not get along with Mr. Keck very well, and it kind of became apparent that what he wanted was for me to be a bit of a spy, if you will, and make sure that he knew everything that was going on in the conservation program. So I was really careful in my reports to only report on what I was taking and what I was learning down there about conservation. I stayed out of all the rest of it. And then in December 64, things had become very difficult for the people who were there. Yeah, Welsh came January, February 72. Yeah, it was December of 74. He essentially resigned under some pressure. So he was out. It turned out that the chairman of the board, Henry Allen Moe, really a wonderful character, books should be written about Henry Moe and his wife Edith. had degenerated to the point where pressure was put on him and he resigned. So he left, and Minor when Thomas took over, reluctantly, he didn't want to be director, but he had to. And he cleared it with Henry Moe that I would continue in the conservation program, which I did. So that went on. And to 76, and then I came back as a conservator. So that was how that all happened. It was kind of serendipity in a way. Mm-hmm. Difficult at the time, but it started me in another direction that I liked very much and could help the organization a lot. So nothing is simple. It wasn't my decision really completely.
But you're happy with it?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, never regretted it. I guess I'm not a person who tends to be motivated in the direction of upward mobility. I like to find something I enjoy doing and do it as well as I can. And particularly coming from a small town originally, I've seen the world, I've done other things, but I like the small town approach and knowing people and being able to get involved. At one point I was involved in something like 6 boards of local and even one national organization, from the Association for Gravestone Studies, which is a big interest of mine still. Locally, the church, the Presbyterian Church, Hyde Hall, I was an advisor to the Cooperstown Planning Board for a long time. Been on the Cooperstown Art Association Board for a long time. The Cook Foundation, when it was formed in 85, to preserve Brookwood. Is that 6? Well, anyway, there were 6 boards at one point. Sue felt I was spending more time doing board meetings than I was doing anything else, but it was worthwhile. Now I'm trying to get out of as much of that as possible. Meetings are not my thing anymore.
Did the switch of people in charge of the program solve the issues, or have new ones continued?
Yeah, in a way. Again, both the CGP and this was given to me when I went down to the conservation program. Pam Larbig did the drawing with all the names of all the staff members at that time. And I was looking at that last night. Oh, actually, she got an assignment on the back, too. Some of those people I'd kind of forgotten. But we did have a short string of directors of the CGP. I think rather than saying it solved problems, I would say it evolved with the time. That worked out well. We had a series of directors. I think I counted at one point, and I have served under 7 directors or presidents. They changed the title at one point, not too long ago, of the organization. And I think with an organization like this, where you have a very charismatic, he wasn't the founding director of it, Lou Jones, but certainly did a great deal for NESHA and the Farmers Museum. Great programs like seminars, which now unfortunately no longer exist. Nationally known things, fantastic people coming every year, all of that. When you're following that act, it's very, very difficult. And there have been difficulties, and then as the world of museums have evolved and the whole atmosphere, we had quite a boom of private giving for a while and other funding sources, granting and all of that. Now it's very difficult. Things change. And it's harder and harder, I think, to be the head of anything like that and keep the balance and keep it moving and keep people happy. You've got both the locals and then the overall board and supporters of the museum. And you've got to try to keep everybody happy and your staff. And you're not going to be able to keep everybody happy all the time. So it's every change we've had, I think, has solved some problems, but also maybe created some. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it still has the qualities that brought you to it initially, the positive ones?
Yeah, it has the positive qualities. There are a lot of other things going on with museums that, frankly, I was never much into. Endless meetings to develop a mission statement. That's not my thing. Some of the administrative stuff is not really my thing. The budget process every year, that with any organization, even a corporation, it becomes a scramble for different departments or different individuals to try to get the most they can out of the place. Fundraising is not my thing. I like to think that if you have a good cause, the funds will come, but it doesn't work that way. You've got to go out and beat the bushes and tell people about what you're doing. But that's not what I really wanted to be doing. So there are certain parts of it that now it's much more complex, I would say, than it was 40 years ago. Change is inevitable, but... And really, I don't think you can say, well, things were good then and they're bad now, because when you look at history, things change, but you can't necessarily say, when was it good, when did it become bad, are we headed to hell in a handbasket, really? We may end up there, but it's just change. It's the reality of it. Yeah, if I were, say, graduating from high school now and thinking about a profession, knowing that the museum field is not going to be very lucrative for anybody, I don't know if I'd pick it or not. I'm not sure. I'd probably end up going into computer science or something like that. And then that may all crash in 10 years. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen. It was Louis Jones, Peter Welsh, Minowan Thomas, and Dan Porter, who had been head of the graduate program, took over at NESHA as director in 1982. Let's see, was it Bill Trampoch who followed Porter? Gib Vincent got in there. Kent Barber. What was that? Kent Barber first, and then Gib Vincent. We had an interim for a while with, she'd been at the opera. She came in to try to, I can't think of her name, came in to try to get the finances straightened out. Now it's Paul, and it was, Steve Elliott. I mean, yeah, because I served under seven of them.
Did you have a particularly good relationship with any of those later ones?
I think the best relationship was with Minowan. We were both interested in objects and technology, how things were produced, and we had a particularly close relationship. And he had the good ability to talk to people both people he was working with and anybody else who was interested, and really tell them what was going on. There were no administrative secrets, I would say, with him. If there was a secret that needed to be kept, he could keep it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very open as to what the problems were and talked to people about how to solve them and so forth. And we never lacked for something to tell. His stories were fantastic, starting with his boyhood. And he grew up in Williamsburg, Virginia, so he knew museums and was the archaeologist there for quite a while. And he had fantastic stories about his... He was, I won't say a hellion, but he was an active, as a child, and teenager and young man, interested in chemistry. He started out in chemistry. And he and a couple of other students at one point decided to make nitroglycerin. And they did in the high school chemistry lab. And it got out of hand, and they fled, and it blew one wall out of the building. His parents were very unhappy about that, and so were the school authorities. He often told about that. And then later he was in charge of the archaeology and had stories about the different buildings and things that went on. So, fantastic storyteller. He was a firm believer in don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. I've heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot of his stories, and I learned how to listen to other people's stories and try to keep some of the folk culture, you know, the folk thing go on. But he learned a lot about Cooperstown. And Bob Cook also was a good storyteller. And Ray Contourin grew up in Cooperstown, so a lot of that can be carried on. One of the ways that I've done that, I'm interested in Lakewood Cemetery, and hopefully we can get a group going to help support it. It's in bad shape financially, and we've given some tours up there. And when you're in a cemetery, I'm most interested in the stones, the carving and all of that. But when there are good stories you can tell about people, that's a good place to do it. Because it kind of puts a personality on it. So I try to do that without being too insulting to anybody. At least if they have descendants around.
Do you think that the fact that the folk life program is no longer part of Cooperstown is a loss, or has it?
Well, I think the program, and there was at one point controversy over it, and the administration involved. I think the problem was they were trying to do two rather different things, so at that point they couldn't do either one of them well. And they needed to concentrate. A lot of the adjuncts came to this conclusion, most of the faculty did, that we should concentrate on the museum program and let other places do the folk. The folk was sort of transferred down to SUCO for a short time, and then went out of existence as a separate program. There were other places like Indiana and Pennsylvania and so forth, where that was a bigger ongoing thing, the folk culture end of things. And we just weren't equipped here to do it very well. I think that was the biggest problem. So I think it was a wise decision to eliminate that. Could I ask what's going on up there?
Yeah, we're taking boxes out of the attic.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. We're trying to get better insulation in our attic, but we have to get a 40-year accumulation of stuff out there first. Horrible.
Did your personal collecting come out of your work, or
would you have done
that anyway?
I've done very little collecting as such since Sue and I were married in 1969. I bought this house slightly before that. The collecting I started as a high school person, I was getting salvage out of old buildings. When they were tearing down houses in those days, you could have anything you could rescue for free. And so I started with that. I started with things like stained glass windows. I got a broken one, figured out how they were made, ordered materials, and started making windows in the basement. Mine was not your average childhood. And growing up, I mean, how many people make stained glass windows in the basement? I probably poisoned myself with the lead, I don't know. And went on to get interested in anything to do with theaters. I got interested in, usually my interest would go toward what other people weren't really interested in. I got interested in the funerary art through the Concord collection, and the collection here collected mourning pictures, usually just the printed ones. I couldn't afford the really good ones. Anything having to do with gravestones. I have a salesman sample for white bronze monuments. It was kind of hit or miss, but furniture, a few old pieces Sue and I collected, and just things to live with, but frankly, we've got more than a house full now, so we don't go out actively collecting anymore. All the time I was an associate curator, you have to be careful not to collect in the area your institution is collecting in. So I would pick up weird stuff and odds and ends of local buildings and oddball stuff, really, that strange prints and so forth that I knew they were not interested in. But the haunting the antique shops and so on pretty much ended when the kids came along and our time was otherwise occupied. Once in a while now, we'll stumble on something that we really think we have to have, but even thinking of getting rid of some of the stuff, it's just too much now. Mm-hmm. And my the kids are not terribly interested in the stuff. At one point, we have stuff stored in the barn at Eagle Street, 17 Eagle, our house there, and I had one of the kids in there, I guess it was Graham, and to help me move something. And I was handling from Finmeter and a coffin and an undertaker's sign and some other things. And he said, hope you don't think that when something happens to you, the kids are going to be interested in this stuff. We're just going to get a dump truck and throw it out the window and have it all hauled away to the dump. And my response to that was, Graham, what makes you think you're going to be in our will? And my daughter, when I told her that, what he had said, she said, don't worry, Dad. I won't let it go to the dump. I'll sell it and try to get some money for it. So that's the state of their interest. And I think it's time to start getting rid of some stuff. Local, there's a fair amount of local stuff, and I try to get that where it should be.
Did you meet your wife through the program?
Well, indirectly, yes. I came back in 68. She had just graduated. She was working at the United Historical up in Utica. And one of her classmates was Ruby Rogers, who was then working with Flip Ward, who was the registrar of the museum. And Ruby introduced us, and it took off from there. So that was, the fall of 68, and we were married in the fall of 69.
That's quick.
We were close enough that we could commute and get to know one another and that sort of thing. And her family are from North Adams, Mass., so that's not too far over the hill. But of course, she was born a New Englander, and I was only an adopted New Englander, having come from Iowa.
And you ended up working together?
Well, we do conservation together, but never for the same institution. She never worked for NASA. She only kept that job, I guess, for about a year after we were married. The commute was to Utica was pretty harrowing in the winter. Worked on the house here. She likes to recollect that she had virtually no say in whether to buy the house or not.